since they want to know.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
The Donovan Mitchell saga finally came to an end yesterday. We got to talk about this for a little bit on the show. Not as in-depth as I would have liked. Mitchell finding a new home in Cleveland, and that kind of, I'm not going to say it brings it into what's been a wild summer in Utah, but it's kind of the icing on the cake. Joining us right now to talk about yesterday's move and what the future holds for this Utah Jazz organization, we have Dan Clayton, love bringing Dan on the show, writer and managing editor for Salt City Hoops, Utah Jazz insider. Dan, great to get you on the show today to kind of talk about everything that went down. It's been far too long, so thank you for the time.
Hey, great to be on. Love talking to my friends down there and that part of Utah, that lovely part of our state.
Yeah. Sometimes we get forgotten, but you always remember us, so we appreciate that.
Oh, heck no. I love it. I love it down there.
Dad, what a day yesterday when this news breaks. I know a lot of people may be a little bit surprised that it was Cleveland. It seemed like a foregone conclusion for so long that Donovan Mitchell would end up in New York, but perhaps the reason why it seemed like a foregone conclusion is the reason why he's not there. Maybe that's the reason why New York almost seemed like this was a home run, and obviously now we know that was not the case.
Yeah. You know, I think it's weird. Sometimes having all those assets kind of works against you, because I think, you know, the Jazz knew that wherever they were going to trade Donovan, the asking price was going to be high, because he's a 25-year-old three-time All-Star who keeps getting better and who turns this game up in the playoffs and who's still under contract for three more seasons plus a player option. So, you know, their asking price was going to be high. But when you're dealing with New York specifically and you know what they have in their asset chest, it's even harder to, I think, settle. And ultimately, look, the Jazz knew that was one of the places Donovan really wanted to be. And they gave, I think the feeling on their end is that they gave New York every chance to make a reasonable offer. I do think the sides got close. I think, you know, Tony Jones and some other people have reported that, like, there were deals in recent days that, you know, could have gotten done, where maybe one side offered something, the other side was inclined to accept, but before they could formally do so, you know, the Knicks pulled an offer at one point and then brought it back with fewer assets. You know, there was a point in time where they were haggling over, you know, whether Quentin Grimes or Emmanuel Quickly would be included in the deal, and that triggered some talk around what some of the other ancillary assets would be. So, you know, that's just kind of how it shook out. And I feel like the Jazz felt all along like the Knicks were you know, engaging seriously, but not always treating this as an opportunity to acquire a three-time All-Star who's 25 years old. And sort of felt like the Knicks were negotiating as though the Jazz only had one option to trade Donovan, and that was, of course, never the case. The Jazz had dialogue with a lot of teams, and that's how it wound up playing out with yesterday's shocker, that instead of going to the Big Apple, he's going to Cleveland, Ohio.
And as far as the Knicks are concerned, really interesting tactics, considering the amount of money that they spent this offseason bringing in Jalen Brunson. And then we now know the RJ Barrett extension, which, I mean, just really a bizarre summer. I don't want to make this about the Knicks, but really, when you consider the RJ Barrett extension, you consider the amount of money that they gave Jalen Brunson, this is a very weird offseason for the Knicks. And maybe it's just typical New York. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like they did pay a lot of money for, like, a play-in team, you know. Like, I'm not sure that a Jalen Brunson, RJ Barrett, Julius Randle core gets you much higher than, you know, 42 wins or something like that. And so, you know, for that reason, it made a lot of sense for them to want to acquire a legitimate star in Donovan Mitchell. Now, I also know that there was some concern there about, okay, well, we need some assets left to make the second trade later and get that second star next to Donovan. And I do get that, but at the same time, like, you know, not making, you know, balking at the asking price for the first trade is a little bit like throwing the baby out with the bathwater, or cutting off your nose to spite your face, or pick your metaphor, right? Like, Like, I can't go to a car dealership and say, hey, I know your Model Y costs $110,000, Tesla, but I have to buy a second car later, so I'm only going to give you 80. Like, they'll just tell me to leave the lot, right? So, you know, at some point, it just comes down to, are you going to pay the price? I think there's a pretty established history. I've tweeted about it all summer. Like, there's a, you know, if you want to trade for a top 20 player in the NBA, you're going to give up 3+ unprotected picks or young guys with star potential, like, you know, the OKC got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from the Clippers in the Paul George deal. New Orleans got Brandon Ingram in the Lakers deal. You know, both those guys have developed into all-stars or borderline all-stars. So, like, that's what you're giving up if you want an all-star or an all-NBA player. You're giving up three to five of those sort of premium assets that have a non-zero chance, a non-trivial chance at becoming a real star someday. And the Knicks, most of the Knicks' offers were just, the Jazz felt they were lacking from that perspective. You know, they were willing to go two unprotected picks. They were willing to include R.J. Barrett, which I think the Jazz liked R.J., but not at the price point once he signed that extension last Monday. And so that complicated things. And yeah, for the Jazz, it was always about, look, everything the Jazz are doing now that they've traded Gobert and Mitchell, everything that the Jazz are doing is about how do they open up that next contention window? How do they find the core of the next great version of the Utah Jazz, which might take some time to discover, to find, right? But, you know, if that's your goal, then all of the Emmanuel Quickleys and, you know, protected picks in the world probably don't get you close to finding the next guy who can have a Donovan Mitchell or a Rudy Gobert type impact on your franchise.
Sure. No, absolutely. Dan, before we step away and talk about what's next for Utah, as I sit and evaluate the two big trades, I mean, because again, a wild offseason, you don't see this too frequently where a team is going to trade their two big pieces. My assessment, aside from the draft picks, which I'd love to get your thought on as well, what's next with all these assets that Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck have acquired, and both their big trades, I honestly feel that the Jazz effectively replaced the player they traded with a rookie in a similar mold. Doesn't have the same upside, but they acquired some solid pieces going forward. So aside from the draft picks, I think it's a pretty exciting time. I like a lot of the pieces that Utah acquired.
You know, I was saying last night to Mark Russell Pereira, one of our writers on a podcast, that we're about to enter kind of a fun time as you know, people who follow and root for the Jazz, because it's kind of like we're all trading penny stocks, you know? Like, we're going to spend the next couple of years, like, you know, some of us are going to develop an irrational love and hope for, like, Colin Sexton, and some of us are going to, you know, really bet on whoever, Simone Fontecchio or Jared Vanderbilt, Leandro Bolmaro. And that's kind of what's fun about the rebuilding phase, is that instead of it being all about expectations, it's going to be all about hope for the next couple of years. And obviously the other edge to that sword is that not all of that hope is going to be realized, right? Like, a lot of these players that the Jazz have acquired this summer, or pieces that they've acquired, are not going to be around when the Jazz are great again. A lot of these players are going to become, you know, there's going to come a point in time when the Jazz realize that their asset value is higher than their on-court value, and they're going to, you know, move some of them later in deals as they try to assemble the next great Jazz core. It's kind of like, you know, the rebuild that we went through 10 or so years ago as a fan base and as a community, where the Jazz had all these guys, and, you know, I do you remember the phrase core four? Everyone was sure that, like, you know, between Alec Burks, Gordon Hayward, Derek Favors, and Enes Kanter, the Jazz were going to have, you know, like a stable of future stars, and yep. Then they drafted Trey Burke on top of that.
Yep.
Oh, now they have a core five. And then the next summer was Dante Exum, and everyone said, oh, now they have a core six. And then really, once they were good again, really only a couple of those individuals were really involved in a central way in why they were good. So again, what you're looking for if you're the Utah Jazz and you're starting this rebuild is you're looking for just as many shots as you can get. That means, you know, shots at drafting high, because that's how you're going to find your next generation of stars, but also just shots on young players who might, you know, who might develop, who might become, who might get better, and who might be an important role player on the next good version of the Utah Jazz. The Jazz took a shot in 2014 on an undrafted player wandering around Europe in Joe Ingles, and Joe Ingles developed into, you know, one of the NBA's best shooters and a starter caliber player, and a guy who's tough and defends well, and helped that, you know, define their identity and their culture. So that's what it's all about. You know, some of these guys will not be around when the Jazz start to ascend and make their way back to contender status in, you know, whatever it is, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, I don't know. But the hope is that some will, and that some of those guys will yield something that makes that ascent more likely.
Again, Dan Clayton of Salt City Hoops joining us right now. Dan, let's jump ahead and look at what's next. Three names that have already been floated around, and it almost seems like a foregone conclusion at some point. The Jazz have to make another move. If it's Bogdanovich, if it's Jordan Clarkson, if it's Mike Conley. I know there's a lot of rumors floating around that the Lakers and the Jazz would strike another deal. And I don't know how much of the New York trade actually involved the Lakers being that third team and Russell Westbrook being shipped out. But it just seems at this point the Jazz have to make another move relatively soon, right? I mean, it's got to be Bogdanovich, Clarkson, or Conley, all three. Maybe one, maybe two of that three, but that certainly seems like it has to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it just goes back to what I was just saying, right? Like, if your focus as a franchise has shifted from how do we be good tomorrow to how do we be good in 3 to 5 years, then having, you know, 32-year-old Bogey on an expiring contract or 34-year-old Mike Conley, like, that doesn't make sense anymore. So now if you have an opportunity to take guys like that who aren't going to be a part of the next, you know, that next good version of the Jazz, then yeah, I think you have to see if you can go out and get assets for them. And you know, the reason why the Westbrook rumor is being so widely discussed is because that could be an opportunity to acquire an unprotected pick in exchange for Bogey. I think Bogdanovich on his own probably doesn't get you an unprotected first. He could get you a first on the trade market. But I think the reason he could get you an unprotected pick is because in that type of a construct, the Jazz would be bringing back, you know, would be absorbing unwanted salary for L.A. L.A. does not want to pay Russell Westbrook $47 million this upcoming season. And that's why they would be rewarding the Jazz for helping facilitate that. One watch out, though, is that after yesterday's trade, the Jazz are, like, really close to the luxury tax all of a sudden. And also, because Colin Sexton was acquired as a sign-in trade, that triggers a rule in the NBA called the hard cap, where even if the Jazz wanted to pay the tax and were willing to pay the tax this upcoming season, which I doubt they will, because why would you pay the tax for a non-playoff team? But even if the Jazz wanted to, they are capped at about $160 million of their total roster cost. So it's going to be hard to acquire Russell Westbrook's salary without sending out almost exactly the same $47 million. So if they make that type of deal, it's going to involve more than just Bogdanovich. The Jazz are going to have to send multiple players out, either directly to the Lakers or involve a third team. You know, Phoenix is also supposedly interested in Bogdanovich. Wojnarowski of ESPN reports that there are multiple teams interested in Conley, although again his contract and his age kind of limit that market somewhat. Clarkson, I think, will have suitors. Even like, you know, Malik Beasley, who they acquired in the Rudy Gobert deal, he's 25, so if he's still here at the end of all this, I think the Jazz will use that as an opportunity to take a look at a young guy who might get better. But if they can put him in a deal, they might put him in a deal as well. So, yeah, I think you're right, Jordan. I think the Jazz are far from done. And I think it's all about, again, can they use some of these pieces on the roster today to really optimize their chances 3, 4, 5 years from now?
He's Dan Clayton, again, of Salt City Hoops. Dan, it is always a pleasure to get you on as we talk about the Utah Jazz. I think we have a pretty interesting season on the horizon. And, of course, in the next couple of weeks, hopefully some more player movement to give the Jazz maybe a little bit of a clearer picture, I guess, moving forward. I don't even know if it gives you a clearer picture moving forward, because over the next 6 years, you can't possibly use all these draft picks. I think maybe that's what's so interesting, right? What does this team look like a year from now? We can only speculate. We can only guess. This is a fun time.
You know, there was an interesting comment at the end of Tony Jones' article today, where he said he basically, after saying that the the fans should expect the Jazz to miss the playoffs this upcoming season, but then he said right after that, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have it in front of me, but he said something to the effect of, beyond that, the Jazz hope to make significant improvements as quickly as possible. So that tells me that there's at least some thinking in that front office around, you know, how could they make this dip into the rebuilding phase as brief as possible, right? If the Jazz's own pick next summer is a high lottery pick and they're able to get a difference maker there, you know, they have enough draft assets to turn around and go shopping and try to add a star that way. I think that there's some belief that Colin Sexton is not yet as good as he can be. Some of the other young guys, you know, same thing. So I do think it's interesting. I think, look, the last couple of times that the Jazz have rebuilt, I think they sort of accidentally got better than they intended to, quicker than they intended to. And the great example is 2017 when Donovan Mitchell's career started, right? They had just lost an All-Star. It looked like they were going to have to kind of redefine themselves. And then all of a sudden, this 13th pick shows up and develops into a star overnight. And so the Jazz didn't really have that sort of protracted rebuilding period. And, you know, maybe they would have been better if they'd been bad for another year or two before they started to climb back to relevance and gotten more assets along the way. But that's kind of what those are the types of questions we all get to, you know, stay up at night thinking about now is, how it most benefits the Jazz to sort of think about their climb back to relevance. And honestly, like, to me, like, look, it's a different kind of fun when you're rooting for, like, everybody loves to root for a good team and think, like, hey, my team has a chance to go far and to win things and to be interesting and relevant. But it's a different kind of fun when you get to kind of take this intellectual look at your team and where everything is kind of this value calculation, and we're all sort of playing armchair GMs, and that's what the next few years are going to be. The next couple of years, anyway, are going to be like. I think it's going to be intriguing, even though I don't expect them to win a lot of games in the short term.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to say the least. Dan, before I let you go, of course, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, so follow us at saltcityhoops.com. We've got a great partnership with the Salt Lake Tribune right now. We also have writers doing great stuff. And then I'm on Twitter at Dan Clayton with a zero for the O. So Dan Clayton, zero N.
Dan, always fun to get you on. Hopefully we can do it again real soon. Enjoy the long weekend.
All right, take care, Jordan. Thanks for having me on.
Let's pause for just a moment. We'll come back and talk college football tomorrow night right here on KOAL. The Utah Utes will take on the Florida Gators. Live coverage will begin at 4 p.m. Kickoff is scheduled for 5. We'll talk Utah Ute football right after this.